And welcome to Inside Albania. I'm pretty sure you know who I am by now, but just in case, I am Alice Taylor. And today I'm going to be giving you a rundown of some of the news from this week, as well as having a very interesting conversation with two special guests. But first of all, let's have a quick rundown of what happened in Albania this week. So after years of bickering and infighting and setting fire to things in Parliament in the name of democracy, the Albanian ruling party, the Socialists, and the Democratic Party faction led by Sali Berisha have come to an agreement. They're going to be friends. Everything's going to be peaceful and calm from now on. Now, they've come to a deal which will see an end to their infighting. And this is in return for the establishment of two parliamentary investigative commissions that will focus on electoral reform and changes to the judicial reform process. Now, exactly what form this is going to take and what concessions will be made by both sides and how long this truce will last remains to be seen. Also this week, Albania's Supreme Court announced the case that 21 January 2011, when four protesters were killed during a protest in front of the Prime Minister's office, will be handled by the country's Special Crime and Corruption Court, otherwise known as SPAC. This came after an appeal made by the families. For those that don't know, the case of 21 January, 13 years ago, there was a series of opposition-led protests, which at the time was the Socialist Party, against the Democratic Party government. Now, these protests ended in tragedy when the Republican Guard shot and killed four protesters. The case has been subject to significant controversy over the years, with a lot of blame shifting and theories of who is responsible being traded. So the fact it's now going to be seen by the highest court is a step in the right direction. So Albania has been in the headlines, not just locally, but around the world recently, mainly to do with the opening of a new NATO military base in Kuchova. I'm joined in the studio today by Artem Mekolari, retired captain, former commandant in charge of the Albanian Navy, PhD and teaching at Alexander Moisu University in Durrës. It is an honour. Welcome to Inside Albania.
Thank you for your invitation.
Now, let's dive straight in. So as I mentioned, Albania has taken some bold steps recently. The old airbase that used to be in Stalin City. Now, I love this story, you know, that during the time of communism, it was named Stalin City when Albania was close to the Soviet Union. Now it's named Kuchova, which is, you know, slightly more neutral. but Albania with NATO, NATO funds have turned this base. They've reconstructed it, rehabilitated it, and it's going to be used by NATO as a base in the region, which is great. Now, Albania has also offered up Porto Romano as a port to NATO. From what I understand, this hasn't been decided on yet. This is huge for a relatively small country in the Western Balkans. To me, this is a huge thing to have two potential NATO bases in one country. Now, I want to ask you, how did we get here from 2009, when Albania joined NATO, to having potentially two NATO bases?
This is due to the commitment of Albania as a member of NATO and prior member of NATO. So Albania has participated in almost all the NATO operations abroad. And also, before the joining the NATO, we have been part of the operation. We have been part of operation in Afghanistan, in Bosnia, Kosovo, Iraq, and many other countries. So the contribution of Albania in NATO is huge, not in the last 15 years, but starting from 1994, when Albania asked to be a partnership for peace member and was accepted. So when we talk about the Kuchova air base, this is, let's say, working together with NATO is a contribution and is the second most important day for Albania in the NATO membership. After the membership in 2009, this is the second one. But there is more, because this naval base, this air base, is, as we said, is available to NATO, because it will be under the Albanian Air Force command. But NATO has invested in the infrastructure, making this base available for their, let's say, units, air units. Why they need to invest? Because Albania doesn't have aircraft. So we have to make it available based on the NATO standards, available for the NATO aircrafts. So they invest in the security issues. They invest in command and control, communication, and other infrastructures which make that available based on NATO standard. It will be a NATO tactical base, mm-hmm. which means that it will be used based on the operational requirement. It's not 350 days okay. used by NATO. We will maintain it, we will keep it operational, and it will be used for NATO operational purpose, especially in the Western Balkans.
And will it be used, and forgive me because I am not a military person, so I don't know all the correct terms, but will it be used when there are operations as a base, or will it be used to repair aircraft or to refuel,
restock? We call it forward operational base, which means it doesn't have the full options as a home base has.
Okay.
So it doesn't have the repair capacities. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have the facilitation for the crews and their families. It has the possibility or the options for logistic purpose mm-hmm. to accommodate, to logistic support, ammunition support, everything which is necessary for a short time operational requirement. And we are talking for hosting up to six aircrafts, fighters, mm-hmm. and two logistic one. Mm-hmm. So that's the maximum strength that the Kuchova Air Base will offer.
So it's to be used short term, you know, planes coming and
yes.
going. And
in this way, having a forward operational base, the NATO is capable mm-hmm. to fulfill the some requirements, tactical requirements like flexibility that the airplanes must have, which in fact fulfill another requirement, air superiority and the possibility of targeting targets in the ground in the case of operation. Mm-hmm. So that's the mission of the base.
And what do we know about Porto Romano? What I last saw was that the proposal was being sort of considered by NATO, and I haven't heard much
since. So far that are only two statements by NATO. One was in 2011, when the Supreme Commander today, who was in another assignment, stated that the Durres port, historical port, has a strategic approach to NATO, to alliance, which means that he totally excluded in NATO operational terms, the usage of Porto Romano. Mm-hmm. And a few days ago, the Albanian Telegraphic Agency has a communication with NATO, with the SHAPE. And finally, they stated in the answer, in the reply, that we accept any offer from our allies, but for the moment, we are very engaged with increasing the ammunition capacities to Ukraine. Mm-hmm. So which means that in a certain way, I see that Porto Romano is not the vision of NATO. Mm-hmm. There are also some other facts which in fact make this impossible, because still is in the evaluation the Pasha Liman naval base from the NATO. Mm-hmm. Albania in October 2019 ask NATO to see the possibility of Pasha Liman naval base as a NATO base. And 3 months later, NATO, the SHAPE headquarters, replied, we accept the offer and we will evaluate Pasha Liman naval mm-hmm. base as a NATO logistic base. Mm-hmm. And still NATO, with its military structure, is evaluating Pasha Liman naval base while our prime minister shift the view or the proposal to Porto Romano. But Porto Romano has some other problems because it doesn't have a feasibility study, has, let's say, problems with a MSA membership action plan with EU, and doesn't fulfill some technical requirements from NATO, which means to have a full capacity of the landing forces. So in terms of military operation, if the crisis erupt in the east, and NATO have the full deployment of forces, only Durrësport and the Bay of Durrës gave that possibility for a full landing operation, while Porto Romano doesn't have that possibility.
I mean, the traffic's terrible around there. Imagine several thousand troops arriving and getting stuck on the NASA.
If you remember 2 years ago, we have an exercise defending Europe, and the landing operation of the NATO forces was not done only in Durrësport, but also in Durrës Bay, because Durrës Bay is shallow, is flat, and you can have a full amphibious operation.
But there was, you know, I've been talking to friends about this, you know, about having an airbase here. And when we look at the current geopolitical context, the war in Ukraine, we have Serbia and Russia who are quite sort of close, and there is instability in the Western Balkans. Is Albania not making itself, I don't want to use the word target, but sort of putting its head above the precipice slightly by having a NATO base here? If things are to escalate, does it increase any risk to Albania?
I don't believe so. The Albania was chosen for the reasons that I gave, that I talked earlier before, but also for another strong reason. Albania is the only country with, let's say, with few or almost no influence from Russian or Russian satellites in Balkan, in Western Balkan.
Yes.
So which means Albania is, let's say, a full NATO allied country, even in the outside influence from Russia.
It's even the people are the most pro-EU out of the Western Balkans.
The history has driven Albania in that alliance. And in the meantime, but when we talk about being a target, all NATO countries are targets. But close you are to the Russian borders, close of a higher target you are. So which means that Albania is far from Russian borders, first. And the second one, being a NATO member, being in that alliance with Ukraine, and also with in our region, where is a lot of instability and a lot of risk for a new, I'm not saying conflict, but instability, internal instability. Having a NATO base in Albania is a commitment, is a guarantee for Albanian security and regional security.
Yes, this is the thing. You know, I should have checked before I came on air, but, you know, like the 2% GDP spending, I don't think Albania meets it.
This year we'll meet the requirement.
We will? Yes. Great. But this airbase, it is another sort of thing to say, Hiwa, protect us, please. You know, we're...
This is, it is in Albania, but in fact, it will be used for regional purpose.
Yes.
So that's the...
I've heard several rumours, and I want to address it because people have been asking about it. There were rumours going around that the base would be used to train Ukrainian troops. Now, this was probably Chinese whispers in the media, but I don't think this is...
is no any statements from Albania or NATO regarding this initiative to train the Ukraine pilots. But even if it happens, it's part of our engagement.
Yes.
So it's not something that we put ourselves in risk. We are at risk as NATO, as every NATO member. So this is something. Albania, I support the idea that Albania have to do everything to support Ukraine. We are a small country with a small budget, but we have the possibility to help Ukraine and to be engaged with NATO with our infrastructure.
Yes.
So that's the way how we must work for move forward to cooperate and to be engaged and to cooperate with NATO and our allies in order to increase mm-hmm. our contribution.
Yeah, we can't pledge billions of euros in aid or ammunition or anything. So there are other ways that we do this, which brings me on to the next question. Prime Minister Edi Rama told me in an interview just before the Ukraine summit in Tirana that it's time for the Western Balkans to play a bigger role in Europe's security. You know, that Europe, the EU needs us as maybe more than we need them. You know, we play a crucial role in ensuring their security and European values. Do you believe that this is correct? And is this NATO base a part of this?
We have to divide it, to split into two parts, as a geopolitical actor and as a value. When we talk for geopolitical values that we have to add to the NATO and the Western Western countries, sure, our region is important in geopolitical terms because it's part of Adriatic Sea, which in fact, in a possible conflict, will be a lake for NATO due to the Otranto Channel.
Yes.
So, and the second one, the route from Durrës or from Albania to the Black Sea is a strategic and mm-hmm. security route for NATO and EU. So this is, a geopolitical position. When we talk about values, our values, best values, must be a contribution to NATO, but we have to improve our values based on the EU values, which are related to the government, to the elections, to the freedom of the people, mm-hmm. etc. So we need some our business climate,
yes.
etc. So must be, let's say, a communication and the additional value, but we have also to improve our values.
Now, also, at the Ukraine summit, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, he asked Western Balkan countries to produce ammunition for Ukraine. As far as I'm aware, Serbia is the biggest producer of ammunition in the region. Whether they have already sent ammunition to Ukraine or not, this has been reported in the press and denied, and there's been backwards and forwards. So aside from Serbia, do any other countries in the region have this capacity or the potential to have capacity to
Bosnia
do this?
Bosnia has capacities producing ammunition. Mm-hmm. And the request of President Zelensky was a very clear and request, because today Ukraine is facing a lack of ammunition, not only for Western calibers like 105 and 155, but also for the Eastern calibers that they are using. Albania Prime Minister, in fact, support the idea of helping Ukraine. We don't have for the moment activity or business in producing not only ammunition, but defense business. We don't have a defense business in Albania. We used to have in the past. But we must help Ukraine. The war of Ukraine is our war. They are protecting our values, and they are protecting our integrity, and mostly most of the Western countries understand that. So mm-hmm. Albania also must do the best. There are several ways to do that. First, to increase or to start the ammunition business in Albania. Mm-hmm. But it will need time. The second one is Albania can be an ammunition hub. There are many countries who have ammunition, but they have political restraints to send ammunition to Ukraine. So Albania can mm-hmm. be an ammunition hub mm-hmm. for Ukraine. So there are ways that...
This has happened in Europe already, I think, with, I can't remember exactly, there were some countries that were neutral Therefore cannot give ammunition directly, but they were sending it to another country.
So Albania can't do that to be ammunition hub for Ukraine. There are several countries in the East, NATO countries, who, due to some political implication, cannot send directly, like Poland, for example, Romania, Bulgaria, even Yugoslavia, Serbia cannot send. So we can be used as ammunition hub, and we can help Ukraine until we will build our capacities.
In terms of Albania building its own capacities, I mean, how is it feasible to envisage a defense sector in Albania, you know, producing various military equipment, be it ammunition or other forms of defense equipment? Is it feasible, or is it something that needs a decade, two decades to be established?
And nowadays, to build a defense business, it's not so difficult, because you may have a foreign partner. And you may invest in that sector, a joint venture. But the point is why we need to invest. First, we need to invest for Ukraine. And what we'll see in horizon, we see a common threat in the future. As you see, the defense budget of the many countries are increased. Yes. Military capacities are increased in weapon, let's say. So which means that even Albania has started slowly to increase the capacities, there will be a time when the capacity will be increased faster. So even for our needs or our neighbors who has no capacity, like Montenegro or Northern Macedonia, so we can have, or Kosovo, we can have, let's say, our business, and we can share this business also with our NATO members or Kosovo.
And just a quick question for listeners who are foreign. What is the capacity of the Albanian armed forces in terms of the Navy, the air force and land forces?
Today, the maximum strength is 8,500. And from 8,500, military strength is the total authorized is 6,500. So the biggest part of that, it belongs to the army, and Navy and Air Force has, let's say, Navy is about 800 plus and Air Force 600 plus. And but we have some other small organization under MOD or General Staff, which in fact are filled with the joint personnel.
Now, I have a question. I work for a media in Brussels as well, and I'm seeing lots of countries in Europe are starting to look at mandatory conscription, like mandatory military service of some form, be it you have to do it, or there's a Nordic model where people fill out a questionnaire, and ones who are quite likely to be suited for military jobs are then given an offer, basically. Do you think Albania would ever consider something like this? Do you agree with the sort of mandatory service for youth?
In general, I agree not exactly with the terms that we used to have in the past, mandatory service, because the requirements from our forces today is 500 to 600 new recruiters every year. And the number of people who are graduated by the high school is only in Albania, I'm not talking abroad, which is 50% of the total number, is about 17,000. So the number in general, so the requirements are very little compared to the numbers, availability of the numbers that we have. But we need to have a kind of engagements of the people who are graduated from the high school or who have a certain age to be educated with the military culture.
Yes, even because, a summer school, a mandatory six-week program. If you need volunteers, my daughter is ready.
You can call it mandatory service, but it will be a kind of military education as a mandatory, and also it increases some strength in the country, like like a military or the coming, let's say, you give the idea, we are not going to live as we lived until now. Mm-hmm. We will have a possibility. Let's say the threat is different. They have a different kind of education and discipline. So they are more engaged in the problems in the country or the risk and the threats the country is facing, which makes them more, let's say, cautioned of the future.
I think it would be good for all students once they graduate to have, be it 6 weeks, a month, whatever, something, some, I'm going to sound like my mother here, to teach them some discipline, some life skills, some survival skills.
Many countries have that, let's say, schools, or let's say, you call it schools. Some countries call it mandatory service, but it's not part, let's say, the strength of the people, of this contingent is not as a strength of the armed forces. This is just a clear future education.
Yes.
Is not part of the military service.
But then maybe from those people, some of them will want to join.
Sure,
and
they
work
have
in...
a kind of education. Yes. They have a better idea about military, and it increases also the perception about military.
Yes. Arta, thank you so much. This was really interesting. I wish we had more time to talk.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Now, as ever, over the last few weeks, the situation between Kosovo and Serbia and Kosovo and the rest of the world has been rumbling on. And I've been watching closely along with Frederica Work, who I speak to regularly on X, and I follow her posts and her support for Kosovo and the region. And now Frederica is a European Parliamentary Assistant, European Policy and International Affairs expert, and as I mentioned, a very strong advocate for Kosovo and the Western Balkans. She's been a guest once before on Inside Albania. So welcome again, Frederica. How are you?
Thank you very much. I'm fine. Thank you.
It's a pleasure to have you here. I wish we had more positive things to be discussing today, but it is what it is.
Yes, unluckily the situation is getting worse and worse. And to be honest, I really fear that these positive developments that are currently happening on a Bosnian level will not have the same influence in Kosovo.
And this is, you're referring to the signal that accession negotiations are going to progress with Bosnia and Herzegovina, whereas Kosovo has filed its application in December 2022, and we haven't had any progress, not even a whisper about any progress.
The problem is that they definitely link the progress on the EU path to the dialogue with Serbia, which to me does not make sense. It would make sense if it would be the same for Serbia, but we see that it's not really the same.
No. And actually, I want to kick off by talking about Peter Stano and some of his comments this week. I was horrified, actually. There was that photo that surfaced of the former Serbian ambassador to the US, who's likely to become the next prime minister of Serbia, sat having what appeared to be dinner with a wanted criminal who admitted to the terrorist attack in Kosovo in September. And Peter Stano's response to this was, well, it's not really my business who meets who in Serbia or who has dinner. And I just found this staggering from someone who lectures Kosovo on, you have to be more European, you're not being very European, you need to do better. And then to have this going on and him like, well, it's not really my business who has dinner with who. What were your thoughts on this statement from him?
Yeah. Exactly the same, plus also the fact that they continue to say there is not enough evidence for investigations on Banjica. First of all, it's not true. The Kosovo government has sent a complete report.
Yes.
Even more complete than other kind of reports, which really explains the role also the Serbian government played in this terrorist attack. And it's unbelievable that how many months after, 8, 9 months after the attack, there is still no reaction, there is still no consequence, there is nothing at all.
I mean, he repeats ad verbatim, we haven't had a final report, we haven't had a final report. So I asked the Kosovo government, have you sent a final report? And this was unquotable, anonymously sort of quoted, but from a very official source. And they said, you know, But we've submitted everything. We've submitted, you know, the result of our investigations, evidence, you know, what else do they want from us? And I asked Peter. I sent Peter an email. Now, normally he gets back to me. He can be quite short in his communication, but I asked him. And I said, you know, the Kosovo government have said that they've submitted everything possible related to the attack. But you are saying you haven't had a final report. So I asked, have the Kosovo government provided the relevant EU institutions with documents, evidence, and what it refers to as proof of Serbia's involvement in the attack? If so, when was it received and what has been received? I then also asked for clarification. When you refer to an official final report, what format do you mean? I mean, is there a word template that they have to sort of fill in? I mean, I don't know, be specific. I also asked him, what is missing from what you've been given so far, which means that you cannot consider that as a final report? He didn't reply. I sent three reminders. I also sent it to other people in his office who sometimes reply if he's on holiday or whatever. So 4 reminders. And nobody has replied to me at all. 0. Which I find quite strange. You know, I would expect that. And I said in the email, you know, there's quite a lot of confusion about this whole final report idea. Maybe we can clear it up once and for all with you answering these questions.
Doesn't surprise me, to be honest, that there was no response. But I assure you, I have seen the report that the Kosovo government has sent, and it's complete. It's full of information. There are pictures. There is concrete evidence. And the fact that within the EU, there has been only the resolution of the European Parliament in which Banisca has been explicitly mentioned. But after that, there has been nothing more about it. For me, it's outrageous, exactly as well as to expect Kosovo to do 100% and always everything that the EU asks. But when Serbia needs to do something, oh yeah, we can close our eyes because, I mean, Serbia is not Russia, so it's not that bad. No, completely wrong. Mm-hmm. Also, Serbia is not Russia, okay, until now. But still, we know that Serbia is quite close to Russia, and we know that the risk is present and that Serbia is actually endangering the stability of the whole region. So it's really dangerous what is happening at the moment.
But I just want you to repeat one thing. You have seen a final report from the Kosovo government that was sent to the European institutions.
I don't know if it was final, but I have seen a report which was with more than 50 pages, and it was really on the spot and with all relevant information inside of it.
So photographs.
Yes. So they cannot say they didn't receive anything at all because it's not true. I don't know what they expect as final because, I mean, everything was already clear from the first moment. So, I mean, it's high time that they actually read the reports they received.
I wanted to ask as well, we had the US envoy to the Western Balkans, Gabriel Escobar, in Kosovo this week. And he said that Kurti is having issues not just with the US, but with NATO and the EU as well. What's behind these comments? Why do they keep saying, you know, he's being difficult? I'm paraphrasing. He's not cooperating. He seems to be cooperating. The monastery decision yesterday, you know, there's elections going to be in the north now. What more do they want?
They cannot control him. They fear him because they cannot control him. He is not like Dodik or Vucic, where you can just like sign an economic agreement and then you know that this person will stay quiet for a few months and then he will start again eventually. And he's not like this. He is really able to push forward his agenda, which is mainly the protection of sovereignty of Kosovo, which in my opinion is the main point that Kosovo needs to push now. Because I think some people around did not understand that Kosovo is independent still. Yeah. And that this independence cannot be revoked or seen as a protectorate. It's an independent state, and it has all the right to be sovereign.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we saw this with the dinar euro issue recently. The Kosovo Central Bank, which is an independent institution, enforced a regulation which is already, you know, I mean, the euro's been used since, what, 2002. The constitution specifies one single currency from 2008. And then the central bank says, okay, we have to play by the rules now. This is what's going to happen. And people start telling the prime minister that he has to override this institution, the constitution, etc. It seems like there isn't this grasp that, you know, Kosovo is an independent country. It has a democratically elected government. It has institutions which function independently from that. And there seems to be a big misunderstanding there with these demands and from the US. It needs to be suspended. You need to... Could you imagine going to the US and saying, you know, you need to accept the peso everywhere? And if you don't, you're in big trouble.
Can you imagine in France, if it would be done in France? Like, I'm sorry, but I always think about if something like Banisca would have happened in France, would be still be silent now? Mm-hmm. I don't think so. So there is always this double standard, and this is really annoying, not only for the people in Kosovo, but also for people like me who are really attached to the region and really care about the region. And I think that this is absolutely not okay. And regarding the dinar, the most common argument they use is like, oh, but the Kosovo Serbs did not have enough time.
But they took 3 months now.
First of all, they had 3 months. Second of all, there was information about it. It's not like they decided from yesterday until tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Like, there's always this twisting of the facts and twisting of the real situation. And for me, this is actually going against everything, also against the enlargement strategy they have here in Brussels, because it does not fit.
And I mean, do you... In your work with your colleagues, the people around you, do you get into some heated disagreements about this topic? Are you trying to really inform people what's going on here? Are you meeting resistance or lack of understanding from people around you?
They don't know so much. Like, they know I'm crazy about the region. So each time there is a topic about it, we discuss it. But they really don't know enough. In general, mm-hmm. And I'm speaking also outside the parliament. I'm just speaking in general also with friends and so on. And I think that this is it's necessary to really raise the voice. It's necessary. And this is why I really care about also bringing facts from Kosovo and from Bosnia, because also in Bosnia, it's not always clear how the situation really is on the ground. And I think it's really important to speak up.
Federica, thank you for your time, but also thank you for the strong voice that you have on these matters. And I'm waiting for you to come to Albania so you can come in person.
Thank you very much. I'm coming soon.
Good. We'll have coffee together and you can come on the show in person. Thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
That's all for this week. With Formula One ongoing, my time slot might be moved around a little bit, but you can check on my social media channels, Alice in Albania on Twitter, X, and Instagram to find out the exact showing time. Otherwise, we will be broadcast every Saturday at 5 on Euronews Albania's YouTube channel and across all major podcasting platforms. Until next week, Mira Pavsim.